better. It's much better. I don't know if that was the signal or there's a leaf blower going on outside, so my mic might have been picking up some of that. But you can hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you fine. And yeah, if you have background noise, especially if you're not using earphones, Skype will react badly.
My camera's off, so you won't see. I ran down to my basement, so I think we should be okay now.
All right.
Okay. So do you mind if I just take it from the top?
No problem.
Okay. So I'll just do the Welcome to Degree of Freedom again. And Stephen Downs, welcome to Degree of Freedom.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So Stephen, can you provide listeners with your background to tell us a little bit about your work you're currently doing in educational research?
Sure. Well, my background is in philosophy. That's what my degrees are in, which seems a bit of an odd mix, but it makes sense to me. We'll talk about that in a bit, I guess. Right now, the work I'm doing, I'm the newly assigned project leader for a project or a program, which is a collection of projects called Learning and Performance Support Systems. And this draws on a lot of the work that we've been doing here at NRC over the last few years on things like personal learning environments, educational blogging, Web 2.0, MOOCs, and all manner of networked-type learning initiatives.
And you mentioned your backgrounds in philosophy. Because my one-year BA is in philosophy, this podcast actually draws some people from that discipline. So before we focus on MOOCs, can you talk a little bit about how your philosophy background has informed your work in teaching and learning?
Sure, and you can tell me how you got a philosophy BA in 1 year, because it took me 5 years to get mine. It may seem odd, but my work in philosophy really matches quite well. My majors were in areas like epistemology, philosophy of knowledge, philosophy of science, and philosophy of mind. So I had an interest in processes of knowledge, learning, inference, and discovery going into my current employment. Also, philosophy brings to me a lot of background and categorization in words, meanings, and uses of words, even in things like social organization. And it gives me an alternative framework to look at how we think of knowledge and learning. We typically think of knowledge and learning like it's a computer program, and we remember rules and things like that. But the human brain works quite differently, and philosophy enabled me to look at alternative ways of understanding how learning could be based on things like similarities, associations, and pattern recognition rather than rules and principles.
Okay, and moving on to MOOCs, that term was actually coined to describe a course that you taught with your colleague George Siemens, I believe. Can you tell us about the origins of that course and what it was like and how it turned into the first massive online class?
Sure. The course was called CCK08, which stands for Connectivism and Connective Knowledge, 2008. Connectivism is the name that George Siemens gave to the theory of learning networks, and it's an approach to education we've both been working on for a number of years. And he did a conference in connectivism, I think it was the year before, so that'd be in 2007, that was quite popular. And then he sent me an email saying, would you like to co-teach a course with me on this? The University of Manitoba offered the course, or wanted to offer the course as part of their, I forget what it's called, Certificate in Continuing Education, something like that. It was a certificate program that they were offering, and it's offered to teachers in Manitoba and beyond. So I said yes. And we got together at a conference in Memphis in the summer of 2008. We mapped out what we wanted to do. We knew we wanted the course to be open. We knew we wanted the course to be structured like a network to employ the principles of connectivism or learning networks that we had been developing over the years. And we expected about 22 people, maybe 24 if we were lucky. Instead, we got 2,200 people. And so we were a little bit surprised, but courses structured like networks expand really well and really fluidly because, there's no real choke point. There's no bottleneck. And so we were able to have the course with that many people in it. And then Dave Cormier came on to help us out with a lot of the audio and the synchronous conferencing that we did. He had a lot of background. He did something called EdTech Talk for many years. And he and Brian Alexander were talking about the course. And between them, I'm not sure exactly what happened, they came up with the term MOOC. Dave has regretted it ever since.
I guess it's another thing we could blame Canada for.
Yeah.
can you tell us more about the Connectivist philosophy or network education ideas that underscore this and other Connectivist MOOCs?
Well, I mean, the idea in Connectivism is that knowledge is the organization or structure of a network. It's not a collection of facts or propositions. It's a structure. It's a way of being, almost. In a literal sense, you become your knowledge, or society becomes its knowledge. And so learning is a process of creating, negotiating, and navigating the connections that form this network. And so the creation of a Connectivist course essentially is the creation of a structure, framework, or environment that enables people to create these kind of networks for themselves, create their and forge their own links, both their own links mentally and their own links with resources, with people, with situations and environments in a fairly open-ended sort of way. So there's no curriculum, no stuff you need to cover and remember in a Connectivist course. Rather, the idea is that you immerse yourself into a knowing or learning community and interact, take part, become, as they say, a node in the network. This stimulates in yourself the connections between neurons, because you're practicing the art that you're trying to learn. But it also stimulates connections in the social environment. So the course as a whole creates new knowledge that was not known prior to the course, and certainly not known by any individuals, including the instructors, and that becomes part of what's learned in the course.
Yeah, what you're describing sounds very different than what I've been experiencing with courses from companies like Udacity, Coursera, and edX. Where do you see the different styles of courses diverging? I guess there's actually a nomenclature for it, with people on the inside talking about Connectivist MOOCs, C-MOOCs, whereas the MOOCs that people may be more familiar with, I guess, are often referred to as X-MOOCs.
Yeah, that's actually terminology that I created. I started calling the other MOOCs X-MOOCs originally, just because, you know, there was EdX, there was MITx, there was an affinity with their approach, and things like TEDx. So there's this X thing that characterized these MOOCs. So I started calling them X MOOCs, and then it was a natural after that to start calling the Connectivist MOOCs C MOOCs. And so that followed within about a week or two. And the big difference between the two is almost suggested by these names, right? The X MOOCs, they're like extra versions of the courses offered by MIT or Stanford or Harvard or wherever. What they're trying to do is to replicate these courses, produce videos and text and even sometimes assignments, replicate these courses and put them online. And these courses are structured in a traditional academic manner where there's, you know, the professor at the center, he or she, usually he, has a body of knowledge in his or her head, which he will then attempt to transfer by means of lectures, videos, and whatever into the minds of students. So it's learning as content absorption, learning by remembering, or as Paulo Freire would say, the banking theory of learning. You're accumulating your knowledge like you would accumulate money in a bank. Our approach, as I mentioned earlier, is different from that. It's learning by immersion. It's learning by exercising the mind. It's learning thought of as us becoming something, developing connections in our mind the way we would develop muscles in our body, not by receiving them externally, but by working out mentally in this environment. So it's interesting you think about it. the origin of the word gymnasium actually comes from academic origins. And, you know, it's a working out of the mind that helps you learn.
And while the different types of MOOCs have diverged, I did find it interesting in a way that kind of your experiment started a conversation around class size, which is once considered a major educational problem to be solved, but within the connectivist framework, bigger is actually better education-wise. So do you see scaling as a friend or an enemy of online learning?
Well, scaling is a friend. It's interesting because people talked about what the original MOOCs brought to the world. And I'm just thinking about this as you asked the question. What I want to underline is the thing that our course brought, which resulted in it being massive, resulted in it being able to scale, was a reliance on and a dependence on openness. And it's this openness that allows scale to happen. Scale is a problem only, you know, if you have doorways, gates, walls, things like that. But if your education is open, your learning is open, your curriculum is open, so that you're not trying to push round people into square holes, then scale is not an issue for you at all.
Kind of getting back to the kind of differentiation between different styles of MOOCs, I've noticed a huge amount of experimentation within the many MOOCs coming to market, certainly the MOOCs I've been taking, especially in areas such as community building and measuring learning. It's almost as if they're kind of making use of other experiments and experiences, I would guess, including the connectivist experience. So what are your thoughts regarding MOOCs as a research platform for educational experimentation? Might such research and experimentation be the thing that ends up distinguishing a MOOC from some other form of learning?
Well, again, it comes back to this openness thing, right? I mean, it's not like online learning was invented in 2011. Right? Online learning was invented before the turn of the century. I was working on it in the mid-1990s. People were working on it before me. You know, one of the very first things that was done when the web was invented, somebody put a course online. So there always has been research, but the way it developed over the years was in closed learning management systems, accessible only to instructors and students in an individual class, which made it very difficult to experiment, very difficult to replicate experiments. A lot of stuff was done, but it was really hard for other people to see what was being done. That changes with open online learning. And that really comes to the fore with the MOOCs. That's, again, the thing that changed, was that all of this work that was being done in these closed environments is now being done in these open environments. And when it's done in an open environment, there's no surprise at all, to my mind, that, yeah, you would see a renaissance in research and experimentation, trying new things. And, I think that's a great thing. I certainly wouldn't expect that we got it right the first time. We might have gotten it completely wrong. And the whole purpose of science and research is to validate some of these original ideas. But you have to do it in the open. You can't run science in a closed facility. It doesn't work.
And I guess if you had to make predictions, where would you see the whole MOOC bus going in the next few years?
Well, the new program that I'm involved in should tell you a bit of that. It's focused around what were called a number of years ago personal learning environments. And so where learning is learning in the last few years went from closed to open. The next major shift, I would say, is that it's going to move or is in the process of moving from institutional to personal. You know, the idea that you pick and then attend one educational institution for the next 4 years or 5 years or whatever, or in your case, 1 year, doesn't make much sense, right? People should be able to get education from wherever it is available, especially if education and educational opportunities are open. So I see a lot of opportunity to create personal learning environments that help people bring together all of their educational experiences, not just from institutions, but from their day-to-day life, from their life on the job, from their hobbies, wherever, bring those together, bring their social network together, bring their resources and creative tools together to provide themselves with their own environment where they can learn, they can manage their own creative efforts, they can store their resumes, their records, and all of that, and basically manage learning in general for themselves.
And just out of curiosity, in addition to your work on personal learning spaces, can you talk about some of the other work you're doing? And are there any new CMOOCs on the horizon?
There is. I'm working with my colleagues across the road at the Université de Moncton, which is a French language institution, and the Organisation Internationale de la Francophonie, which is the international French-speaking organization of French-speaking countries. We're mounting a MOOC beginning in January in French on open educational resources, and we're bringing together, you know, the French-speaking community that are experts on this topic together, just to, you know, create some new resources and foster the dialogue and the conversation around open educational resources en français. And this is an interesting thing for me, first of all, because it makes me a learner as much as an instructor, because French is not my native language, and I've been working on it, learning French over the last few years. I'm getting better. I'm getting good enough. I can give talks and that in it, but it's still very much a second language. So I'm really enjoying the process from that aspect. And also, too, it's allowing us to explore the idea of MOOCs as promoting or helping cultural communities promote themselves, preserve themselves, carry their identity. So there's the community building role of a MOOC as well as the learning role of a MOOC. So this is something that's interesting to me.
Well, Steve, on behalf of me and all the other MOOC, on behalf of me and all the other MOOC students out there, I want to thank you for everything you did to make this brave new world possible, and express my appreciation for being on the show today.
That's my pleasure. Happy to do it.
Okay, well, I think that one came off okay.
Yep. I've got a good recording here, I think. So if your recording fails for any reason, I should be fine.
I'll appreciate that. Yeah, I was going to say if I ran into problems, if I could re-record something, but maybe I'll just swipe yours. But like I said, Skype essentially does weird things, but Pamela seems to win. It says it's recording. It's doing it.
Yeah. Oh, maybe. Yeah, maybe it was Pamela that was messing up your audio.
Yeah, I don't know. I've just had gremlins this week.
Yeah, well, that'll do it too. Yeah, I've had weeks like that. I've had years like that. This computer's just never going to work again.
But, you know, I regret that the lineup I've had over the year, I haven't had a chance to take any CMOOCs. I mean, they mostly seem to be in education. Is that just because I haven't dug deeply enough to find some courses about that way?
I don't know, because I haven't done demographic studies of MOOCs, so I don't know what percentage is in education, what percentage is in astronomy. So I couldn't say, really.
Mm-hmm. After definitely taking January off when this is all done, I want to kind of get back in and take a small number of courses and sort of really kind of savor each one of them. So I'll be keeping an eye peeled for any interesting CMOOCs out there.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be some. I mean, we get some listings on MOOC.ca, so people keep contributing their MOOCs. So happening.
I'll eavesdrop on that and check it out. So, well, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it. And probably, we've got don't have a show next week, and then next week's a holiday, so my guess is this one will be kind of 3 Fridays from now.
Yeah, well, let me know, and so I can, let me know when it's up, and then I'll be able to post it on my site as well. People will go listen.
Absolutely, I'll definitely send you a note, and good luck with it. I hope we run into each other sometime in the near future.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.